First, let me say what a delight it is to be here with you. Clergy don't get out much in this diocese, and it's always such a delight to be able to worship with other communities. You know you have a reputation, I hope, throughout this diocese as a parish community that has a real heart for justice and equalizing the inequities of our society. And for that, even if I've got 1 week left as the dean of the diocese, I thank you. I thank you on behalf of the whole church. You know I was invited to come here and talk about stewardship, right? It's probably where your friends are this morning. Often enough over the years, I have heard people suggest that it is unseemly for clergy to be talking about money, and that it certainly wouldn't do for them to know who gives what. Now, that's a topic for another whole sermon, and I'm not going to go there this morning, so don't let your mind go down a bunny trail right now. You'll just have to invite me back. But I will counter that what and how much we give of ourselves to the things that matter, and that's not just the church, right? Even more to the point, the heart with which we give of ourselves goes to the very core of our spirituality. It tells me a lot about priorities and values. Spirituality is the stock in trade of the clergy. You can begin to guess what that sermon would be about, right? But not just of the clergy, it's the stock in trade of the church, of the people of God, of the people in this place and who are joining us today online. So yes, I am going to talk about charitable giving, about stewardship, about money. But I want to do so from the perspective of soul. So I'm not here today to pick your pocket, but rather to invite all of us to consider our hearts and our purposes in giving. And in this regard, our Jewish ancestors have a whole lot to teach us. I can't believe, I was probably ordained 30 years before I learned of this aspect of Judaism. But in Judaism, the word which most closely approximates what Christians have meant by charity is tzedakah. I'll spell it for you because it's a bit odd. It's T-Z-E-D-A-K-A, tzedakah. But there are very important differences. First of all, Christians tend to think of our charitable giving as voluntary. We talk about a free will offering. By contrast, for a Jew, tzedakah is considered a mitzvah or an obligation. So that is an obligation laid on every adult Jew, every Jew who has been bar or bat mitzvahed. That's what a bar mitzvah is. You become subject to the obligations of your religion. So get this, this starts at age 12, the obligation to do tzedakah. Even the poorest of Jews has an obligation to perform tzedakah, with the proviso that in so doing, a Jew isn't to put him or herself in need of somebody else's charity, right? That's sort of counterintuitive. Secondly, the English word charity, indeed even the English word love, doesn't quite capture the spirit of tzedakah. The Hebrew word tzedek, from which you get the name Zedekiah, you read that name in scripture, refers to righteousness or justice. To perform tzedakah, therefore, it's a matter of righteousness. It's not a very, we don't use that word. When I was a girl, we talked about righteousness, but it seems to have fallen into disfavor. But what it means is that we are putting to rights the inequities of the world. It's about ensuring that the poor and the needy have returned to them the things they need in order to prosper. And that includes everything from money to land to respect. I submit that when we think of our gifts in terms of furthering the righteousness of a just or righteous God, we may come to think of our gifts and ourselves as givers rather differently. So I have found this concept of tzedakah extraordinarily helpful as a tool for examining my own heart and generosity. I also find it helpful to recognize that tzedakah would have been known to Jesus himself. It would have been a bar mitzvah, a mitzvah laid upon him. And I think once you know a bit more about it, you will see how clearly this concept informed his teachings about wealth and money and giving. So, in the 12th century, there was a legendary rabbi named Maimonides, and he classified the forms of tzedakah into 8 categories, and he categorized them, he ranked them from the most worthy to the least worthy. And it's a classification which in Jewish teaching persists to this day. So here they are. So this is not 8 sermons, just 8 little paragraphs, okay? So bear with me. The first, the most meritorious form of charity, of tzedakah, is to give somebody else the ability to be self-reliant. So it's not sending money to Africa, it's going over there and teaching people how to take what they already have to build water filters. That's the most meritorious form of tzedakah. We afford the recipient the dignity of not having to be in the debt of anyone. What a gift that would be. Second, number 2, to give anonymously to an unknown recipient. So that means neither the giver nor the recipient knows the identity of the other. It's a double-blind gift. The donor doesn't get to pick the cutest orphan in the catalog, but rather surrenders complete control over how or where his or her gift is deployed. So to give anonymously to an unknown recipient. Third, down the list, we're still pretty close to the top of the list here, is to give tzedakah anonymously again, but this time to a known recipient. So the point here is that the donor knows who is benefiting from his or her gift, but the recipient never learns the identity of the benefactor. And so what that does is it means that the recipient is free from feeling beholden to somebody who has helped them out. That's why that is such a high form of tzedakah. Number 4. So now we're just coming up to the cutoff point and halfway, all right? Number 4 is now to give tzedakah publicly. So everybody knows who you are, to an unknown recipient. In other words, you don't know the recipient's identity, but they sure know yours. So think here of the phenomenon of naming opportunities. You make a donation, let's say, to install an elevator here at St. John's. You don't know exactly who will benefit by your gift, but the beneficiaries all sure know they are riding the Mary Smith Memorial Elevator, because it says so right inside. Which is still a very worthy form of tzedakah. It's just not quite so worthy as if you had done it without looking for recognition. You just made the gift. Okay, number 5. This is still pretty good. It's to give. They're all good. It's just some are more good than others. Number 5 is to give before you are asked. You're a little late for that in this parish, I think, this year, but you probably know that it is axiomatic amongst fundraisers that the number one reason people do not give to a particular charity is that nobody asked them. Stories abound of faithful Anglicans who leave their estate to the Salvation Army rather than to their own parish church. And why? Because the Salvation Army asked and their parish church assumed. And yet, this, the fifth highest form of tzedakah, sees the donor giving without even being asked, before the rector sends the stewardship appeal, right? Do you see, we're talking about soul here, to see that that kind of charity, to give before anybody even asks, it requires you to be the kind of person who is conscientiously attuned to the needs and the injustices around you. And you also need to be the kind of person who understands how redemptive it can be to save another person from having to come and ask you to help them. I heard a piece on CBC radio yesterday morning. A young person with his mother was a single parent and on a disability income, couldn't afford to feed her children well, and her son, who seemed to be a teenager, even though they had a food program in his school, felt embarrassed because he thought the other kids would marginalize him and judge him if he asked for a breakfast program. So it's to give before anybody asks you. Does that mean I've got 5 minutes? Is that the 5 minutes line? All right. Number six, now we assume you've been asked, it's to give adequately after you have been asked. So the difference is here that you have made somebody wait for what they need. You've made them come and tell you that they can't manage without you. But to your great credit, you do respond adequately. Now, that's an observation that I think invites us to consider what we mean by an adequate gift. I take it we're saying two things. First, that our gift is commensurate with the need. And sometimes that requires us to rethink our priorities. I mean, none of us has infinite resources. People say to me, I'm on a fixed income. Well, I'm on a fixed income too. Salary is a fixed income. None of us has infinite resources. But in the face of great need, let's say your adult child has an accident and is no longer able to work. An adequate response may include spending your golf time babysitting, or redirecting your charitable donations to home care. It's commensurate with the need. And secondly, an adequate gift takes account of our personal capacity to give. We're to give in proportion to what we actually have. Because remember, tzedakah does not require you to put yourself as a donor in the need of somebody else's gift. All right, we're coming into home base here. Number seven is to give willingly, but inadequately. For example, to give $20 without hesitation for flood relief when you can afford $200. That's why I hate those little Twitter apps where you can just give $5 now and feel good about yourself. I don't think so. That's an inadequate response to the magnitude of the need. So you're still performing tzedakah, but there remains in your heart, again, we're talking about soul here, there remains in your heart what Christians would call a spirituality of scarcity. Either you just don't get the magnitude of the problem, and that's a problem all by itself if you don't, or for whatever reason, you feel a need to hang on to your resources in case they're going to come in handy for something else. And lastly, this is a person who is still giving, they're still performing tzedakah, but they give, this is number eight, you give, Maimonides says, in sadness. That's the least meritorious form of tzedakah. It's to give, but to do so grudgingly. I'll fill out the bleepity bleep pledge card, but I am sick to the teeth of always being asked to dig deeper. What did that church ever do for me anyway? Do you notice how far short this response falls? First, of tzedakah, which is performed without even being asked, but even more importantly, of the idea that tzedakah is not about me anyway. It's not about what I get out of the church. It's about what I, through my gift, allow the church to do to set the world to rights, something this congregation, as I have said already, understands. I should note that there is a second, slightly different interpretation of giving in sadness, which is that one is giving out of a sense, really, of pity rather than of religious obligation. We don't like much to be thinking of being motivated by obligation or duty these days, and so maybe it's hard for us to grasp what would be wrong about being motivated by sympathy. The point, I think, is that that kind of giving is dependent upon someone managing to touch our hearts or having to persuade me emotionally. If I walk along Pandora, somehow you have to prove to me that I actually feel sorry for you. In other words, I will give only if I feel sorry for you. The problem is, and we know this, not all need, even though it is genuine need, not all need is pitiable. The problem here is that there's something, or there can be anyway, something just a bit patronizing about pity. So there you have it. 8 kinds of tzedakah or charity, from the most worthy to the least worthy. And I offer them to you because one of the dangers inherent in any fundraising effort, be it an annual appeal or a capital campaign, is that fundraisers, and this includes parish stewardship committees, can get overly focused on the gift rather than the giver. But we are the church, and it is, I believe, equally our business to focus on the heart of the donor. We are called, each and every one of us, to examine our own philanthropic motives and practices and to grow not just in largesse, but in spirit. And in this, our Jewish brothers and sisters have much to teach us. Amen.